Welcome to another episode of The Road Less Traveled. I am your host, DB, and on today's episode, we're just going to talk about some general prison slash firefighting things. If you're just jumping in, I recommend starting with the introduction episode. That way you have at least an idea of what you're listening to or about to get into. For those rejoining us or coming back, thank you. Glad you guys are here. I know I've been talking about the firefighting thing for the last few episodes, and the most recent episode, besides this one, was kind of an experiment. It was a sleep tape episode. You were meant to fall asleep, not so much listen to the story as drift off to dreamland. Was it a success? I have no idea. I don't know. Haven't heard from those people. Maybe they're still asleep. Maybe they never woke up. Maybe it was so boring that they just could not do it. I don't think that's the case. If it is, sorry. But oh well. On this episode, I know we're getting a little burnt out on the firefighting things, because honestly, I could talk about my experiences. I had 2 years worth of wildland firefighting experiences. Hundreds and hundreds of those hours were just boredom. It was great to get out of prison or the conservation camp, the minimum security place that I was at this point. It was great to get out. I actually half the time looked forward to the fires, because usually it was just... you know, it wasn't like too hard work. A lot of the times we got dispatched, we were doing mop up, maybe cutting a little bit of line for the containment of the fire. But overall, like the area that we were being dispatched in, it was a lot of grass, like cheatgrass, sagebrush, you know, things that burn very quickly. The fire spreads rapidly, but burns out just as fast usually. Didn't so mind mind those fires. You know, you usually were out, got out for a few hours, maybe a few days. And other than obviously having to wear, you know, long sleeve everything and carry insanely heavy stuff for miles upon miles while working with your, you know, your tool, swinging either a pickaxe or a whatever you just happen to have, shovel, rake. And you might laugh, those are actual firefighting tools for wildland firefighters. I mean, maybe one day I'll go into descriptions or details, but it was hard work. We were high-speed landscapers, more or less. We would basically saw a swath of however much they told us to do right through wherever and make a containment line. That was fun. That was great. You know, had some crazy experiences. There is absolutely nothing like seeing a 737 or even a 747 drop fire retardant over a massive wildfire. Nothing like that. Seeing them come up over a mountain and they're flying buildings. And most people are either on an airplane when they fly passengers, you know, commercial, whatever. You're inside. So the scale of the plane, like you kind of have a disconnect to it because, you know, you walk through the little tunnel and then you kind of can see out a couple little windows here or you see it as you're waiting at your terminal or whatever. But you don't generally see planes fly directly overhead or directly at you and then pull up last minute. It is insanely impressive that they are able to have that kind of control. And it looks like they might be having fun too. You know, it's dangerous what they're doing. They are the best of the best, these pilots. So it's just insanely impressive to see. And also you're getting fire retardant drops from helicopters too. As a kid growing up, for some reason, I just had like a fascination with the Chinook helicopter. It's Russian made. It is a twin propeller blade. So if you see this helicopter, it has two blades on top, front and the back, that are both pointed upwards. I don't know. I just always liked that. It just seemed weird to me. You know, visually, it's just an odd looking helicopter. It does hold quite a bit of crew or tools or whatever. Also can do retardant drops. And for some reason, there was a fire that I was on where we had a Chinook and it was red. And I loved it. I was fascinated with this thing, but it kept, for some reason, hitting me with the water. So on this fire, they didn't have access to like retardant, which, I mean, you can fly all the way back to base, get more retardant, and then, you know, fly all the way back, or you use what's naturally available, like reservoirs, water supplies, etc., lakes, whatever. And there happened to be a small lake at this fire that we were at, and they kept picking up lake water, and just drop it on me. And I, the first couple times I got hit, like, I didn't get hit extra direct, like it was just the outsides of it. I still got drenched, mind you, like just absolutely soaked. But I didn't mind so much because it was refreshing. It helped cool me down. But as the lake started to get lower and lower with water, I noticed the last drop that hit me, I was starting to get kind of covered in silt and mud. And that led me to believe that, okay, wait, now he's scraping bottom for this lake. There's the potential that he's going to dredge up either rocks or, you know, branches from trees or logs, something like much larger. There's a good chance like this dude could actually hurt me like a lot or kill me. So we, you know, let him know like, hey, by the way, you're starting to like actually affect the line. You're starting to hit the people on the front here. And thankfully, we did still get hit a couple more times. I mean, it's best case scenario, guys. We're all working very hard to put out a fire here. And there's sometimes the disconnect between, you know, different units, different groups. You know, you have the chaos of all the action happening at the same time. You also have the noise of all the action that's going on. So sometimes not so easy to hit on the radio or relay information. But nobody got hurt. You know, everything was okay. And thankfully, like I said, I didn't get hit directly with retardant because that is a very hazardous material. You don't want to swallow that stuff. You'd probably be very, very sick. But that fire, it was cool. Like, it was a very strange fire because, like, midway through that particular fire, it started raining. I have fought fires in the snow. I have fought fires in the rain during floods. It's confusing when that shit happens because you're like, why are we here? What is really going on? We've gotten flooded out of fires where we had to set up base camp and just basically shelter in place on the side of a mountain while we just got flooded out. I mean, it's always odd. Like every fire, most fires, like say 8-9 times out of 10, pretty standard, pretty straightforward. But those 10-15%, like, it's just a very fluid situation. Like things are constantly in flux and changing. And so you just have to adapt. And I was fortunate enough, like we were always able to get the job done, even though the people that I was crewed up with weren't always the hardest of workers. They weren't always exactly the people that you wanted watching your back. They aren't exactly people that you would trust with your safety. So I am very fortunate to say that I made it through. Like, I didn't get hit with like a rolling boulder or a log. I didn't get hit with a saw because, yes, we were given chainsaws as inmates, as prisoners, which confused me too. I don't know. It was a trip. It's hard to like tell people in this day, like, hey, I fought wildfires for 2 years. Most people kind of give me that weird look, and then I, you know, start talking to them, giving my side of the story. I don't mention that I was in prison, you know, because again, I'm ashamed of that portion, but I was certified. If I wanted to pursue a career in wildland firefighting, I very well could have. I didn't want to. It takes a heavy toll on your body. I'm currently 36. I started fighting fires when I was 30, which is kind of a late time to jump in. I will say, being 6 feet tall and only weighing about 155, I am proud that I was able to hold my own and outclass most of the people around me. People that outweighed me, I was able to carry more, go longer distance, and not complain nearly as much. My complaints mostly revolved around like, hey, if everyone just pulled their weight, no one would have to work hard. Like, as long as we all did our share, we wouldn't have to continuously work harder to pick up slack. Makes sense. It's how I feel about every job I've ever worked. So, one thing that I did find kind of discouraging, because a lot of the people that I was in prison with were at least at the minimum security side of things. Like, they were in, generally speaking, for lower level offenses, like either say drug trafficking or drug use, possibly whatever, you know, fraud, embezzlement, white collar crimes, stealing, petty theft, etc. Like, people can get to a minimum security place even with, like I say, a higher ranking offense. Like Class B felonies were allowed to go to a minimum security camp. I had a Class B, or have rather, a Class B felony. I had no violence, at least insofar as how the state looked at it. No violence was in my case because it was considered an accident. But people that were a certain time frame away from any violence in their crime, say 3+ years or whatever, they could be evaluated to go to camp. There were certain things that would bar you from camp, like if you had an escape charge or, you know, evading, whatever. Like there were certain things where they would not allow you to go to camp. Obviously, if you had a sentence where you weren't going to get parole, you weren't going to camp, you probably weren't even going to medium security. But so, like, look at it with, you know, open eyes. Like, it, a lot of people that were allowed to go to camp made sense. But it is very hard to get drug addicts and people who are of an addicted mindset to focus on what you want them to focus on, because their minds are always now hardwired, I believe, to seek out or want drugs or to feel that way, the way drugs made them feel. So if we worked on, say, projects like forestry projects or highway beautification, you would always find people like trying to find cigarette butts because they wanted to smoke tobacco. They wanted to save up as many cigarette butts as they could so they could go through it, pick out any good tobacco or even the bad one, whatever, and just basically recombine it into hopefully one full tiny cigarette or whatever. But sometimes they would find drugs, or they would get drops and they would get drugs in and they would start tweaking and doing all sorts of bad stuff. And that was discouraging. But it was also kind of hard to show and explain to these guys, because there was a few. They were certified as firefighters just like me, and there was a few of them that were like, hey, you know, when I get out, I'm going to take my certification and I'm going to go run with it. I'm going to try and work for this company as either a firefighter or a sawyer. And they could have if they followed through. But one thing that I did not like and will openly say that I'm against was, at least in my state, if you are a felon and you got your certification, yes, you can go fight wildfires for the exact same company that employed us while we were incarcerated, because there was a working partnership between that state entity and the prison system here. However, there is a cap to how far within that company you can move. So sure, you can be a wildland firefighter where you risk your life on the front line day in and day out. You might even be able to make it to a crew boss, possibly, if you aren't looked at in any negative way because of your prior felony. However, anything beyond that, you will never make. You will never get promoted to anything beyond that. You will not be a captain. You will not, you know, you're not going to run your own firehouse. You're not going to do any of those things. And it's because they say that the law states that you can't. Now, I don't like that. I don't like that at all, actually, because so I can't work at a bank. That makes sense, right? Like I have a felony. So, okay, I don't have any financial crimes, which would make sense. Like if I was embezzling money, sure, don't put me at the cashier or till. Don't have me running the vault teller, whatever. Like I get that. If I have fraud, sure, same thing. But why would I not be allowed to be, say, like a cashier or a teller at a bank if I had, I don't know, like the DUI. Let's use a felony DUI as an example. Why can't I do that? What's the correlation? You might consider me untrustworthy, which is probably how the company looks at, or they would look at, say, why should we give someone who does have a felony a chance when there are millions of people in this country that want to work that don't have felonies? Well, I would just have you look just even briefly at how COVID affected everything. You think and feel and believe that there are millions of people in America that want to work, but this might surprise you. No one in America wants to work. We would all be very happy if we just got our money and just got to go do whatever we wanted, which might be working, but not out of necessity. Nobody wants to work. People enjoy working, but they don't want to work. No one wants to work every single day. That's just not a thing. So let's look at it differently then. And let's try and use the example of the firefighting thing. Okay, I have a felony. I can't work at a bank. Why do you have only certain stipulations for the firefighting thing? Shouldn't it be, okay, well, you have a felony, so we will not hire you in this position? It is, I believe, more disrespectful and kind of insulting to say, yes, you can work here, but we don't trust you. Because at the end of the day, that is exactly what they're saying. We only trust you in this position, which is a very high risk, possibly high injury position. And anything beyond that where you are, say, given other people to oversee and are responsible for them and their safety, well, unfortunately, we don't trust you. And that confuses me because I wouldn't want to work for that company. I would never want to work for a company that isn't actually giving me an opportunity. They're just filling shoes because they don't want me to move beyond that basically beginning step. Because I can't. But also they don't want me to. They already have the people above running things, and they need people below. So wouldn't it be better if we just reevaluated certain positions, like the firefighting thing, for example, and be like, well, you know, if you're with our company for 10 plus years and have demonstrated over a decade of being this reliable cornerstone of our fire station, we would love to have you as a crew chief. You have consistently, day in and day out, proven that you made a mistake in the past, and you know what? You learned from it. Fuck no, that is never going to happen. Absolutely never going to happen. And spoiler alert, all those millions of people you said want to work, and also why would we give a chance to a felon versus somebody who doesn't have a felony? Well, I'm going to reiterate a quote that I said on a previous podcast episode, and it was Hunter S. Thompson. I'm going to paraphrase a little bit, but he basically says, we are all guilty of something. The majority just haven't been caught. And that's true. You know, it doesn't have to be large things, it's small things. Just the fact that we've done something means, well, we were dishonest or untrustworthy at a time. And whatever the justification or reason for it, it doesn't have to be big. But it happened, you know? Whatever the excuse is, it still is just an excuse. And there are better excuses, and there are worse excuses, but it still is just an excuse. And it might help if we had a little understanding for those smaller infractions, but wouldn't it be nice to also have a little bit of understanding towards the larger ones? Wouldn't it be different if you wondered why somebody, I don't know, murdered someone, for an example? I don't know. It'd be kind of a hard ask to try to understand that, but people figure it out. People are able to forgive. And it seems like we judge a lot of people that, oddly enough, have no direct effect on our lives. All these inflammatory comments that get made online, it's so easy to do. Or you see a headline or you see somebody in the news and you automatically have formed your opinion about them. Or even worse, just accepted whatever the opinion was of what you were being told. I don't know enough about these people. I don't know enough about what they've done. I have snap judgments too. But I keep trying to remind myself that beyond that natural moment where you're like, hey, and then you get that thought in your head, the second thought should be, is this information correct? Is this reaction correct? Is there anything I might be missing here? And I'm getting way off topic. I don't even know what the hell I'm talking about anymore. I think I'm just calling for people to, I don't know, look within themselves and just think, like, we need to reevaluate everything. It is shocking to me that we set this country up with basically no direction at all. And everyone, for some reason, at least the diehards in here, feel like we got it right. Holy shit, no one has gotten anything right ever on the first try. Like, you think you did. But you can always do better. You can always improve. You think the first thing that ever got made was perfect? Certainly not democracy. We know that. We know for damn sure democracy was not correct. because when we set this country up, we kind of omitted a lot of things like, you know, certain races, certain, you know, privileges, certain, I don't know, laws. We made exceptions. We started, you know, kind of saying all this weird shit that we probably shouldn't have. And yet we still think we got it right. Like, it is overwhelmingly obvious that America was founded on false principles that only served a select group of people. How do you think we got the laws right too then? Because the same laws that have not been updated were made back when. And it comes down to state law too. Those are a little more recent, but we should take a deep look at everything. Why do we wait until there's a problem, which the problem has been going on for decades, centuries. But why do we need to wait for a vocal minority or even a vocal majority to say, we need change. We need this to change. We need this fixed. This is not working. And then, you know, people make a big fuss. They say, oh, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Nothing gets done. Nothing gets done. I was talking to a coworker yesterday, and he was ranting and raving, and it was just a lot of frustrations, and he was not wrong, not in the least, but his frustrations seemed like the frustrations of millions of Americans. We don't know where to start. That's why back in 2021, we started having all those riots, which were very boring. I was like slightly excited when shit started popping off left and right. I was in prison still, so I couldn't do anything. But I was like a little bummed out. Like all it was like mild looting, not even like mass looting, but like mild looting and just some like really dumb attempt to, I don't know, make a statement or something. If we even overlook the looting side, that was just a small group that got out of hand. So I'm not blaming anyone on that. Like, shit happened, whatever. The corporations can write it off. But we had the potential to affect real change. And all that happened was, I remember a couple statues got taken down, a couple parks got renamed, and a couple apologies were made. And that was what the effort of a year and a half of, I don't know, protests, marching, and then also like that little bit of looting. That's what that accomplished, was a token effort. And it would have been nice, like, if that momentum had kept going, but fuck, it just became all just frayed at the seams. And I tried talking to a lot of the OGs in prison, like the black OGs, and be like, guys, I just want an opinion on this. You know, I don't care about the looting, whatever it is, what it is, like, what, how do you feel about what's going on right now? And a lot of them, they were just kind of sad. Like, these are the older dudes that lived through the days of, like, real civil rights movements, you know? MLK, Rosa Parks, like, true leaders that brought about change in a long-standing way. Like, we can still look at Martin Luther King and we can quote that man. That's how powerful and influential that man was. His voice reaches out beyond time. Rosa Parks basically made a stand by not sitting at the back. That echoes throughout time. But can you tell me with any level of like assurance that what happened just even a few years ago affected anything, changed anything, and will actually continue on? No. I don't even know who the leader of that movement was. And that might be part of the problem. There was no central figurehead to look towards. There was no one that was organizing this movement. It was just segregated in a way. It was unorganized. And that, I believe, is another little part of the problem. All these movements are trying to do their own thing. You know, everyone is trying to do their own thing. Like, we have a movement for this, we have a movement for that. But couldn't we, and I know, we do need movements to pull everyone up to a certain standard. You know, we want equality. That is what we're striving for. But equality needs to start in everyone's day to day, and how we treat people, and how we, speak to people, and how we just view people. Like, it needs to be taught at home. It needs to start in the house. I mean, you can demand change and all this other stuff, and at a certain point, sure, it might help. But we need to have parents instill this in their children. And I'm so sorry. I know it started with firefighting and then it somehow turned into morals and values. I don't know how to pull it back and actually make it all tie together right now. I just will say that while I was in prison, there was an exceptional amount of people there that didn't know who their dad was. I don't even know who my dad was. And I believe that's unrelated. I was adopted. I was raised by an incredibly loving family. A lot of those people didn't know their dad. A lot of them were raised either by their mom or, step-parents, something beyond what the norm would have been. And there was a lot of drug addiction. There was just lack of education. And I think, we can all do better. And if you're already doing great, help your neighbor maybe. I'm not saying, raise their children or pay off their bills or anything, but help them in the sense of just, do you even know anything that's going on with them? Do you have any idea who the person to the left or right of you, do you know what they are going through? Maybe they just need someone to talk to. Maybe they just need that one little piece of help. And I guess that's where I'm just going to leave it. I'm going to try and jump off at a point where I can just say, based off of my prison experiences, there was a weird sense of community in prison because you're forced to be there. You are forced to be around all of the people that you probably don't want to be around. So in your own life, in your day-to-day, when you are around a lot of people you don't want to be or you're in a situation you don't want to be, generally, that's up to you. You can just remove yourself from that situation. You can avoid it. You can leave. You can do whatever. But when you're in prison, you have nothing but you. You can only control you, and you can't really control your situation. So you can only control how you feel towards it, how you react towards it, how you handle it. And I did withdraw a lot. I read my books. I did a lot of writing, but I also talked to the people around me. At a certain point, I had to. I couldn't get through it solo. I wish I could. But even the people that I didn't want to interact with, I still gave the time of day to at least talk to a little bit. And even the hardest of guys in there was still just a person at the end of the day. They still had their own motivations, thoughts, feelings, wants, needs, etc. And if you could just realize that the things that they wanted didn't overly differ from what you wanted. I want, to have a family. I want to have a house. I want to, have a well-paying job, etc. And they wanted a lot of those things too. But it's the way that we went about acquiring those things that differed. I was raised by a mom who was an accountant, and she told me to save money and do this and do that, and I more or less followed that exact thing. These guys, a lot of their, like I said, they didn't grow up with dads, or if they did, he was either a drug addict or an alcoholic. They saw a lot of, just terrible things in the household, and shockingly enough, they picked up those habits too. Yet, we so easily blame them. We should blame their parents. You ever see somebody and you immediately just blame them for their current predicament? Maybe it's just a long-standing line of bad predicaments that they've never been able to get their way out of, going all the way back to childhood. Just have a little understanding. And if you don't understand, take a breath. Just realize you're not that person. You can leave. And hopefully they do better one day. But try to find it within yourself to have like just that moment of peace. You might get frustrated, but they got to go back to living their life the way they are. You can go back to living your life the way you are. Guys, I'm going to be honest with this episode. Not really sure what we accomplished here. Glad I could talk, say some things. Maybe resonates with a few of you. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe this whole episode was a waste. But I'm going to jump off now. We've hit the 30-minute mark, guys. Thank you for listening to The Road Less Traveled, and I hope to see you next Wednesday for our next episode. Sorry this one was a little late. I uploaded it a few hours late, but we're still on Wednesday here, okay? Trying to keep with the routine. Thanks for joining me again, guys. Take care.